Welcome to Business on the Brink, a production from iHeartRadio and How Stuff Works. Joe Vlasic had a cream of the crop idea when he decided to add Polish pickles to the family creamery business.
And then he heated things up further with innovative packaging and marketing.
But despite holding a majority of this condiments market, things went sour, and the company soon found themselves in, well, a pickle.
Find out what's the deal when we talk about how Vlasic became a business on the brink.
Hi, everyone. I'm Jonathan Strickland.
And I'm Ariel Kasten.
Welcome to Business on the Brink. And Ariel, once again, my proverbial but metaphorical hat is off to you for that amazing introduction.
Thank you. I wasn't sure if you were going to love it or hate it.
No, you weren't sure if I was going to love it or really love it.
Well, hopefully the person who suggested this topic, Will Kotis, will also really love it.
Yes. So we are talking about Vlasic pickles, which, you know, it's one of those brand names that I've certainly come into contact with, but for some reason didn't have sticking power in my brain. So As I was going through the notes, I was sitting there thinking, like, why do I know this? And then as soon as I get to the iconic character that was used to market the pickles, then I said, oh, right, that's these guys.
Well, you'd have to because, and we'll get to it, most pickle companies don't do a lot of marketing.
Yeah. I remember the Kate's Pickles folks because they were out of the Carolinas and they cast an actor as their spokesman who was later a slasher killer character on a horror movie that I was in.
Oh, fun.
That's a lot of tangent that has nothing to do with the rest of this episode.
You know what, though? It's a glimpse into your life and we're all grateful for it, Jonathan.
Yeah.
So do you even like pickles?
You know what? It was certainly a more recent acquired taste for me. As a kid, I despised them.
Me too.
I could once in a blue moon eat something that had pickles in it, like a potato salad or something. But I never wanted to have a pickle spear. I didn't want pickles on my burger. I was one of those stereotypical picky eater kids.
Mm-hmm.
There was like maybe three things in the world that I wanted to eat, and I only wanted to eat those things. But these days, I like a good pickle.
Me too. I like a lot of pickled things. Pickled beets, Girardella. I can't pronounce it, but I like to put it in my mouth.
I also really like pickled vegetables too, mm-hmm. and also you and I both worked at a place where pickles were pretty important to maintaining your ability to continue to stay upright.
Yeah, the Georgia Renaissance Festival. That is actually where I learned to enjoy them.
Yeah,
because they weren't the little floppy things you got next to your sandwich at a fast food restaurant. They were nice, crisp
pickles.
Like fresh pickles.
Yeah. And this was because they had a lot of salt and electrolytes mm-hmm. in them that helped us maintain ourselves after sweating like crazy all day. So let's talk about Vlasic pickles in particular. And I did not even know that they were named after the person who started the whole business, Joe Vlasic. So tell me a bit about Joe.
So Joe Vlasic was the son of a Croatian immigrant who moved to Detroit with his family and started a creamery business. He had been working a factory job during the day and was saving his every penny he could from his $2 a day job.
Wow.
To start this creamery.
Wow. Yeah, that's definitely a bootstrapped operation right there.
Yeah. Well, Joe took over the family creamery in the 20s, and then in 1937, he added pickles to the mix of what this creamery was selling.
It seems like a logical step.
There were some reports I read where he was asked to distribute them. It might just have been a matter of, hey, here's this thing at the time, pickles were a very regional product.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't sold nationwide necessarily. I mean, you could get them nationwide, but just—
They were from regional, farmers and picklers.
Like you would get milk or cream from the milkman. So creamery, pickles, they're all very local delivery. And he was selling specifically Polish-style pickles with garlic and dill.
Mm, those are the best.
Yeah, they're good.
Okay, we're going to have a fight.
Yes.
We're going to do that off mic.
I also like a nice crisp bread and butter pickle.
Oh, they're so sweet.
I know.
Okay. Well,
it's adorable.
I'm a sour person, so that's
you are. All right. And fun fact, Barrel brined pickles, which is what he was distributing and selling, don't really have the same shelf life as the pickles you buy in glass jars at the supermarket. But at this point, they weren't
in jars. They hadn't been canned pickles.
They hadn't been canned pickles. They might have been like given out in jars,
but not like preserved.
Yeah.
So at this point, you get to the beginning of World War II. And, you know, there are a lot of stories about companies during World War II running into challenges because there were shortages on materials. You wouldn't necessarily think that such a thing would affect a pickles business, but in fact it did.
Yeah, the U.S. government rationed pickles. I mean, if you figure this, they're easy to ship. They don't go bad right away. Even if they don't last as long as, you know, today's shelved pickles— they still last longer than, you know, a cucumber, let's say.
Mm-hmm.
So the U.S. government was rationing about 40% of pickles that were produced at the time, which meant for everybody else, there was a pickle shortage.
So for everyone else, they were not in a pickle because they couldn't get a hold of one.
Unfortunately. Uh-huh. So this is around the time when Joe started testing and experimenting with a new idea. And that new idea was hot pack pickles, which meant he put the cucumbers into a glass jar, covered them with the hot brine, and then the jar was sealed.
So this is essentially sort of a very primitive version of canning.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Well— It essentially was canning because it greatly extended the shelf life of these pickles.
Mm.
Hot pack pickles are what we get today, and they last a lot longer than a barrel brined pickle.
Gotcha.
Yeah. And so this was, in fact, the introduction of the Vlasic pickle. It was in 1942, and people loved it. So much so that Joe had a hard time keeping up with the demand once the war was over.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you'd imagine he'd have a hard time keeping up with the demand during the war when pickles are being rationed, but even afterwards, people really liked these hot pack pickles.
And continuing with the whole family business idea, his son, you know, Joe had inherited the creamery from his father. Then his son, Bob, joined the Vlasic Pickle Company,
mm-hmm.
and would rise to the position of general manager for the company. And they opened up a Vlasic factory in Imlay City, Michigan.
Which is in the thumb of the mitten. So you've got the mitten, you've got the finger. This is not a geography class. Okay. So at the time, Vlasic was still doing their creamery business, and they were also making things like sauerkraut. It makes sense. You know, you've got all of the brining equipment there. Sauerkraut is...
Yeah, another sort of pickled product.
Sort of, yeah.
Sauerkraut's also awesome.
Well, I love sauerkraut.
Let me ask you this, Ariel. The demand for pickles was going through the roof. People were really going crazy for these Vlasic pickles. The company's doing quite well. Give me an idea. What was the size of Vlasic pickles at this point?
Well, in 1946, they had 25 employees, which, you know, it's a pickle business. Sure, 25 sounds reasonable, exception of the fact that their factory was three large buildings. Two were for receiving cucumbers, and then... one was for distribution, basically. They had 28 sauerkraut tanks, and they were processing 50 acres worth of cucumbers.
That's a lot of cucumbers.
That is, for 25 people.
It's a lot for anybody, but yeah, when you're thinking about 25 people having to deal with that, it's twice as many acres as you have people working, and you know not all of those people are out there in the fields picking cucumbers.
Yeah. Some are having to, like, sort through and deeply inspect cucumbers for bruises. I don't know. I'm assuming that's a part of the process.
Well, Joe Vlasic would retire in 1963, and his son Bob officially took over the company. And this was at a point where Vlasic was really riding high. I mean, they were the lead pickle company,
mm-hmm.
the pickle provider, I guess you could say, in the United States. And they were hitting $10 million in sales by 1967.
Yeah, that's not too shabby.
That's a lot of pickles.
Yeah. By the 70s, because they had these pickles that had this long shelf life, they were expanding nationally.
Yeah, they could actually ship them across the country and they'd still be good when they got to their destinations.
Yes, and they were really, really smart. So Vlasic did a lot of things that were really smart. So they were really smart about using the entirety of their crop, or at least as much of the crop as they could. So pickles that were too big, cucumbers that were too big to fit in a pickle jar, they would cut up into chips or spears or relish so that they're using as much of their stock as they possibly can, as much of their produce.
Cutting down on waste dramatically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And by 1974, the pickle consumption in the country was up from 2 pounds per capita when Vlasic started to 8 pounds per capita, all because of Vlasic.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's when they decided, okay, we don't need to do the milk and cheese business anymore. We're just going to focus on pickle and pickle-related things and relishes and
yeah, people are eating four times as many pickles, mm-hmm. but they're drinking as much milk and eating as much cheese as ever. Let's stick to the growing,
yeah.
incredible business of pickles.
So Vlasic was number one, but they were kind of number one at first. So at this time, they owned 10% of the national pickle market.
Mm-hmm.
Heinz also owned 10% of the pickle market, but Vlasic did surpass Heinz pretty quickly.
So around this time, this is when Vlasic would introduce that advertising mascot, the one I said once I saw who it was, mm-hmm. I immediately went, oh, right, I know this company. And the mascot is a stork.
Yeah, a stork who sounds like Groucho Marx.
Yeah, and he's like, he holds a pickle occasionally, kind of like a cigar, sort of like Groucho Marx would hold a cigar that looked like a cigar.
Yeah, yeah, but it's a pickle, so it's healthier for you.
Yes, definitely.
Side effect, curbing the smoking craze.
Yeah,
I don't know. Anyhow, storks, they picked a stork because they wanted to capitalize on the idea that pregnant women crave pickles.
Interesting. Okay, so they're playing on a stereotype.
Yes.
That women, when they are pregnant, have cravings that people might describe as being out of the ordinary, and pickles frequently are among those cravings.
Yeah, and because, Vlasic is the best pickle, of course they're going to crave a Vlasic.
Yeah, I mean, why would you crave anything less for your unborn child?
Yeah, well, and also on the Vlasic website, it says that the stork became the mascot because the national birth rate at that time was down, and so he was low on babies to deliver, so
he had a lot of spare time on his hands.
Yeah, Vlasic managers wanted to offer him a chance to deliver pickles instead. a couple of mixed stories. I don't think they're necessarily mutually exclusive.
Yeah. and more importantly, Vlasic was actually taking the step to advertise on a national level, which was sort of unprecedented for companies that were, selling pickles.
Yeah.
It was sort of a new thing.
I mean, you certainly don't see entire ad campaigns or mascots about it. You might occasionally get here's a pickle to put on your sandwich ad, but, nothing big. By 1977, they held a quarter of the national pickle market.
Wow.
Yeah. And it bumped up their sales to $100 million a year.
Gosh.
Yeah.
That's so many pickles. It's hard for me to wrap my head around this. I mean, again, it was one of those things where, of course, there's pickles everywhere. You see them when you go down to the grocery store, you see jars and jars of the things, but you don't think of a $100 million business.
Well, you have to realize, in the 70s, we're still getting out of the aspic and the Jell-O,
Sure.
The Jell-O casserole era, kind of.
Okay. Yeah.
It's a little past that. But, okay. You also have restaurants who get pickles, who include pickles with their sandwiches, delis, things like that. So it's not necessarily just the homeowner.
Yeah, just going through jar after jar.
I mean,
to be fair, I go through snack foods like that, too. They're just not pickles.
There are some people who would go through jar after pickle, and we'll get to that.
Okay.
But, this marketing really skyrocketed them. It convinced buyers to pay a premium for their pickles, which is good because they spent $2 million on marketing for the new pickle line. And by this time, they're up to about 138 pickle products.
Yeah. Now, what you know that you really hit an unprecedented level of success as a company when that success is so great that the Federal Trade Commission starts to think that maybe something is up.
Yeah, yeah. The Federal Trade Commission did do an investigation on them, but they were just selling pickles.
Yeah,
they just chose to market them.
They were just selling pickles way better than anybody else was.
Yeah. And then in 1978, Vlasic Pickles was sold to Campbell's, Campbell's Soup, Campbell's, for $33 million, which was one of Campbell's largest acquisitions ever. And this decision is actually what would put Vlasic Pickles eventually on the brink.
Wow.
It would make them a business on the brink.
Well, I need to hear more about that. But before we get to that, let's take a quick break. Okay, so Ariel, before the break, you mentioned that Vlasic Pickles was acquired by Campbell's. But we also had just mentioned that Vlasic Pickles was doing business like gangbusters. Mm-hmm. They were doing incredibly well on their own. So what would lead to the decision to actually agree to this acquisition?
Well, according to AtlasObscura.com, the price of cucumbers was rising.
Oh.
A lot, by like over 35% since 73. And Vlasic had to take loans to buy their cucumbers, about $20 million worth.
Okay, so this was literally the raw materials that they were using. The price was going up, and it's not like you could easily switch to something else. I mean, pickles, as we think of them, are like the word pickles, we think of pickled cucumbers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So they didn't have a whole lot of other options.
No, and I mean, they were making they're making about $1.3 million profit off of the $100 million worth of sales, reports that I saw.
Wow, that is eye-opening, right? To do $100 million in sales, but that's how much you make in sales. And when you look at the actual profit being $1.3 million, that is different. That is amazing.
I mean, well, they were also spending money on expansion and renovation and things like that.
Marketing as well, obviously.
And then the pickle market also slowed down. Mm. So everybody was really excited about pickles for a while. It was the food trend. And then people were like, pickles.
Yeah.
I'm kind of pickled out.
I'm so over it. Also, at the time, Campbell's was looking at a competitor, right? They were acquiring companies like Vlasic largely because they wanted to have a better position against Heinz.
Yes.
So, you know, these are companies that were known for the, you know, really dominating things like grocery store shelves. And obviously you want to have the best potential position against your competitor. So that was the idea behind the Campbell's side of it.
Yeah. And then they did work on growing the Vlasic brand and increasing sales, even though the market wasn't really growing. In the 80s, they improved packaging, so they color-coded a lot of their packaging so you could better tell what sort of product you were getting in the jar. They improved the jars that the pickles came in. And then they decided to expand Vlasic into other specialty food arenas like open-pit barbecue sauce and olives and cheese.
Oh, interesting. So Vlasic, which started as a sort of additional business on top of a creamery, now would actually include a dairy product in its line.
Yeah. The cheese didn't do well. The cheese company they acquired went bankrupt and they dropped it. The olives actually did well and they became a leading olive seller.
Well, and that I have less – it's less of a logical leap for me. Mm-hmm. You know, olives and pickles, you often see them next to each other in grocery stores because, again, I think a lot of people just sort of have that association, even though it's a slightly different process, pickling and the process you have to make – you have to go through to make olives edible. Mm-hmm. But, I can see that. The cheese is what – it was sort of like when we talked about how cheese saved PBR for a while.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they also bought, you know, a barbecue sauce. So they're kind of buying all of these condiment sort of things. So I guess some people view cheese as a condiment. I view it as a staple of life.
Yes. I think of it as a lifeline.
Also, I don't really go into it in the notes because it's its own story. But Campbell's did acquire Swanson, the company Swanson. And that'll factor in just a little bit. So in 1991, Campbell's consolidated the Vlasic division to New Jersey and cut 140 jobs.
Okay.
So because Vlasic had expanded out, They brought them all back together and made, I guess, the production of it a smaller production.
Gotcha. And they also started to look into other new ways to package and market pickles, including the pickle snack packs and sandwich stackers.
Yeah, so these aren't like little pickle chips, like the little round things. If you cut a pickle long way.
Oh, I gotcha.
So you get a long slice.
So it's a cross section of a pickle.
Yeah. And so that, you know, they were basically trying to find new ways to get people to buy pickles.
Right.
You know, like I have a jar of pickles in my fridge for whenever I make a sandwich. How often do I make sandwiches? Okay, well, now you need to buy them to put in your kid's lunchbox as a snack. And that, again, it worked. Didn't work enough because by 1996, Campbell's was viewing Vlasic as an underperforming brand.
Now, in 97, you had mentioned that Campbell's had acquired Swanson. Mm-hmm. And in 97, they thought, let's offload this.
Yeah, they tried to sell it. It didn't go as planned. They decided to spin off all of their quote-unquote non-strategic brands into their own entity.
I guess non-strategic is the nice way of saying unprofitable.
Unprofitable, superfluous.
Gotcha.
In 1997, the Pickles, along with Swanson, Open Pit Barbecue, and a few other specialty feuds, specialty foods, were spun off from Campbell's into Vlasic Foods International Incorporated. And then they eventually became publicly traded.
So
within
now,
the year.
Now we've got Vlasic as its own company again, and its own company with other companies now lumped in underneath it.
Yes. Campbell's reasoning behind it was, you know, Vlasic and Swanson are both strong brands.
Mm-hmm.
They're historically strong. Maybe they can turn around under new management. This whole move was called a leverage spinoff, which meant they incorporated the new subsidiary, and then the subsidiary would take on the debt that Campbell's attributed to those companies when they owned it as a way of purchasing the division.
Gotcha.
So when Vlasic and Swanson and all that was spun off, they took on $500 million in debt.
Seems like a pretty convenient way for Campbell's to try and just shed some debt of its own.
Yeah, and so they actually, it was a whole big thing. Vlasic took them to court over this. They said they were being fraudulent, that it was that the debt transfer was underhanded.
Gotcha.
Yeah, that they used false financial data to push the spinoff and the debt transfer. And that by doing so, they aided a breach of fiduciary duty by the by Vlasic Foods International's directors. You know, Vlasic also said that Campbell's overstated Vlasic's value in this transaction to get tax-saving measures. Mm. And some people said that it saved both Campbell's and Vlasic taxes they didn't have to pay. But it really didn't help Vlasic, obviously.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
So this is one of those things where there were lots and lots and lots of articles that were written about this particular controversy, I guess is what we could call it.
Yeah.
Because this was – I mean, this was a big deal. You're talking $500 million in debt. I mean, that's enormous. And it's – you would think this is also a great way to not just shed debt but to scuttle a company before it even gets a chance to get going.
Well, the courts ruled that Campbell's was on the up and up in this spinoff, in this debt trade-off, that it was, in fact, liabilities, cost of the sale, some other debt that maybe Vlasic took on after they became an independent company, maybe close to the spinoff. But, you know, Vlasic did file an appeal to that. There are a whole bunch of legal documents that you guys can go look at if you want more information on that. But it kind of gets into the weeds.
Gotcha. So we get to 1998. Vlasic is an independent company again, and their sales are not exactly performing up to what they were hoping.
Yeah, pickle consumption was down by 7%. They were spending millions on advertising new products. And then they did a Hail Mary. So when Will wrote us about this, he had mentioned that he had read about Vlasic Pickles in the Walmart Effect book. And so he thought it was a bigger story, and it certainly was. But in 1999, Walmart started selling gallon jars of Vlasic Pickles.
Mm-hmm.
They were 12 pounds a jar.
Okay, 12 pounds for essentially almost a bucket of pickles.
Yeah.
How much did they cost?
$2.97 a jar.
So for less than $3, you could take home 12 pounds of pickles.
Yeah, they were testing this product at around $3, maybe a little bit more a jar, and then when it got released nationwide, they dropped the price.
Gosh.
Yeah. I mean, part of the Walmart effect is that Walmart is so focused on pushing their brand of like the cheapest price that they hurt other companies doing it.
So this was really a way for Walmart to get people to come into Walmart stores, not necessarily a way to work with a vendor.
Yes. Now, it did raise Vlasic sales immensely. Jars flew off the shelves. They were selling 80 jars a week. It made up 30% of Vlasic's business at the time. But it was causing them millions of dollars in profit loss. They were only making pennies on the jar, if they were lucky, according to FastCompany.com. And their profits dropped by 25% or so.
Yeah. I mean, if you end up cutting the sale price of your product that dramatically, then your profit margin gets razor thin.
Yeah.
And with something like pickles, that's not a comfortable line to ride, I would imagine.
No. Plus, if people are buying your pickles at Walmart or Sam's Club or wherever, they're not buying them at the grocery store.
Where the prices are higher and your profit margin is
better.
Where
the prices are reasonable. So, you know, and beyond that, now you have to get enough cucumbers to meet demand.
Right. Because, yeah, it takes a lot more cucumbers to if your jars are now 12 pounds each instead of, like, you know, a couple pounds.
Yeah, and so you've got this product that Vlasic has spent millions of dollars to convince people it's a premium product you need to pay premium price for, and they're selling it on the super cheap. Vlasic did ask Walmart to raise the price of their pickle jars to, like, $3.49. a jar.
Yeah.
So about 50 cents more or so. And Walmart said that if they raised the price on those jars, they would stop buying any other of Vlasic's pickle products.
Yikes.
Yeah. They did eventually let Vlasic raise prices, but by then
it was pretty much too little, too late.
Yeah. So, you know, a lot of people will quote the Walmart effect as being what did Vlasic in. The experts that I've read about, at least some of them, have said Walmart didn't do – like, you'd think it would be the reason that Vlasic went under. It was really the spinoff. It was the debt acquisition in the leverage spinoff that did them in. But this certainly didn't help. It might have been the nail in the coffin.
Gotcha. Yeah, that's exactly what I was about to say, the nail in the pickle. Well, we've got some more to say about this story and to kind of wrap things up. But before we get to that, let's take another quick break. Okay, so the spinoff was sort of a death sentence for Vlasic. The Walmart effect was a very kind of sad funeral for
yes.
Vlasic. But here's the thing that's crazy about that is this is a case where you have a company that's on the brink of financial ruin.
Yeah.
But it's still crazy popular in its individual market.
Yeah, they still held 24% of the pickle market, maybe 25%. You know, they're selling tons of pickles. They just aren't making money on them.
So it's funny to think about – I mean, we've seen this happen before too, but it's funny to think about a company that on paper, if you're just looking at sales, like the number of products being moved from a sales perspective, it looks like it's doing incredible. But then when you look at the cost of doing business, the amount of profit per sale, you start to realize, but this is not sustainable. It would be like a company trying to create a loss leader, you know, a product that they're selling below cost in order to sell related products at a much higher premium.
Exactly.
And then no one buys the other products. They just buy the main thing. And then next thing you know, you're out of business.
Yeah. Well, that's what Vlasic was looking at. And Heinz was looking at Vlasic because Heinz didn't have nearly as large a hold on the pickle market and the relish market at that time.
And I'm sure they would relish the idea of having more.
Yes. You've just peppered this with jokes.
Uh-huh.
It's actually the pickle pepper relish market. I tried to put a pun in there, guys, but I didn't mention the peppers. So they wanted to – Heinz wanted to bank on this and get Vlasic on the cheap so that they could obtain Vlasic's market share.
Mm-hmm.
At the time, Vlasic was employing around 550 full-time workers and then another 450 to 550 seasonal workers between their pickles and their open pit barbecue. Heinz thought it got its chance to acquire them in 2001 because Vlasic did file for bankruptcy protection. After they were unable to make a $10 million interest payment.
Wow. Mm-hmm. I'm sure that was a loan to try and pay off some of that debt.
Yeah. Yeah. They stated at the time when they filed that Vlasic did, that they had $649.9 million in debt.
Might as well just round that on up to $650
yeah.
at that point.
And
what's $100,000 between friends?
A lot. I will gladly take that $100.
So so essentially $650 million in debt. Mm-hmm. How much do they have in assets?
$458.3 million. Ooh, so I guess $458 million, what's 0.3 among friends?
That's not great. That's a lower number than the amount of debt.
And their stock was down 90% from its high of $4.88 a share. So, yeah, things are bad.
So Vlasic and Heinz are potentially going to make a deal. Mm-hmm. What was Vlasic hoping for? Like, what was their asking price?
Well, they were going to sell to Heinz for $195 million.
Hmm.
And then I heard conflicting reports. Some said that that deal fell through. Others said that another deal came in.
Okay.
And
another party came in.
Yeah. Kicked Heinz out.
Gotcha.
So Heinz was going to buy for $195 million. They were going to buy the pickles and the barbecue sauce. And then there was another food distributor, Conagra, that said they were going to buy some of the other brands in the spinoff. But instead, Hick, Muse, Tate & First, a firm that did leverage buyouts, created a food division.
So, and, I'm sorry, Hicks, Muse, Tate, and First. Okay.
Yes.
I want to make sure I had heard that correctly.
Yes.
All right. So they do leveraged buyouts. That's just what their business is.
Yes. Okay. And they offered $370 million cash.
Ooh. Okay.
For Vlasic.
Definitely higher than 195.
Yeah. Which meant they'd get all of Vlasic's North America assets in the buyout, you know, subject to
approval.
Yeah. Vlasic, but it also meant that unlike secured creditors wouldn't necessarily get all the money they were owed.
Mm.
And, you know, shareholders may not get anything. So Vlasic did also work to get some financing, about $25 million, to help pay those suppliers and vendors that they owed money to as a part of this.
Now, I assume the acquisition went ahead and went through.
Yes. And afterwards, Vlasic Foods International changed their name to Pinnacle Foods,
okay,
which was the divisions of Hick, Muse,
et cetera, et cetera.
Tate & First, yeah, that bought Vlasic. Pinnacle did lay off a few people, like about 70 out of 3,000 or so. And that's among all of Vlasic Foods International's divisions, which
gotcha.
Did include, you know, Swanson and things like that.
Right, not just the pickles, but mm-hmm. these other companies that had been lumped under when Campbell's spun them off.
Yeah, but overall, they were looking to increase production volume, add workers, and acquire more brands. And they did, in fact, acquire more food brands to put under that umbrella.
Mm-hmm.
Then in 2007, Pinnacle Foods was acquired by the private equity company Blackstone Group.
So the fish that ate Vlasic got eaten by a larger fish.
Yes.
Because as the Phantom Menace taught us, there's always a bigger fish.
But as a subsidiary. So Pinnacle Foods stays as – Pinnacle Foods are about to go through – we're going to just kind of breeze through the rest of their history, but they – continue to be a subsidiary throughout
gotcha.
All of this acquisition. They got listed on the New York Stock Exchange under the Blackstone Group and made a good chunk of money. Then in 2014, Hillshire Brands tried to buy Pinnacle, but then that deal got canceled and Pinnacle got a whole bunch of money because the deal got canceled. Like the sale didn't go through.
Gotcha.
So it was kind of recompense. They got
interesting.
Around $190 million for
okay.
it. And then in 2018, Conagra, who originally was going to buy some of Vlasic Foods brands.
Yeah, the stuff outside of the barbecue and
the pickles. Yes. Yeah. Came in and bought Pinnacle for $8.1 billion.
Wow. That's a lot of cheddar, as they say in the food business.
Very clever. And they pulled Pinnacle off the New York Stock Exchange. You know, Conagra owns way more than Vlasic, way more than Swanson, way more than Open Pit Barbecue. They have a mountain of food brands that they owned. But they are still putting efforts into Vlasic Pickles.
So Vlasic Pickles still exists,
mm-hmm.
even though it's gone through like multiple changes in ownership at this point.
Yes. And they're still coming out with new fun innovations.
Okay.
Yeah. Like
wind-up pickles? Like
No. Okay. So in April of 2019, they announced that they were making pickle chips out of real pickles. So not like the little circles that you buy to put on your sandwich, but like freeze-dried pickle rounds that you'd eat like a potato chip.
Gotcha. Okay. All right. You know, I was looking at you like you were crazy, but then I thought, wait a minute, fried pickles are a thing, and I
like
those.
They're so good.
Yeah.
Yeah. When I heard this, I was super excited.
Okay.
I think that would be my preferred way to eat a pickle. You get all of the flavor of like a salt and vinegar potato chip, but it's not a potato. Fun fact, guys, I can't really eat potatoes very well.
And it's also not as messy as eating a pickle, where it's a challenge to bite into like a big pickle. It's a challenge to bite into one of those and not have it just erupt over everything.
Yeah. So I really feel like looking at lessons, that this is – there were certainly some missteps, like trying to get their pickles into Walmart, that were mistakes for Vlasic. But I feel like a lot of it was just circumstantial,
yes,
and outside their control.
In some cases, like in the case where their supply, the cucumbers, the price was increasing, there's not a whole lot you can do about that. I mean, you can raise the price of your pickles, but there's going to come a point where you're going to reach a tipping point where the consumer is not going to be willing to pay the amount of money that you need to charge if you want to keep your profit margin to be the same, despite the fact that your raw materials, the price has increased.
Yeah.
And we've seen that happen with lots of other stuff too. Like anecdotally here in Atlanta, there used to be quite a few places that sold ostrich for ostrich burgers.
Yummy.
And I used to go and get ostrich burgers because I don't eat mammals, but I'll eat a bird. And now no one sells them anymore because the ostrich farms, it was just came to a point where in order to make profit, they were going to have to keep increasing the price of an ostrich burger.
Yeah.
But if you increase it beyond a certain point, no one's going to buy it because they'll view it as being too expensive. Or so few people will buy it that most of your stock will go as waste because it'll spoil before they can sell it. Same sort of thing here. So I think in many cases, this was something that was largely unavoidable. Like, you know, we said they were selling $100 million worth of pickles every year, but their profit would come in at just $1 million. I say just $1 million. Well, you're talking about a whole company. That is a pretty small profit.
Yeah.
I am sad, Ariel, that you did leave out the peppers earlier in that because you could have picked a pun of pickled peppers.
I thought about putting that in, and I decided I was cooler than that, Jonathan.
However, Vlasic's not that cool because Bob Vlasic created a book of jokes about pickles.
He did. It was a part of their marketing campaign, which, by the way, Bob Vlasic told Forbes in 97 that a lot of their competitors were manufacturing-oriented, and they were the opposite. They were marketers who manufactured something to sell. I don't necessarily – like, obviously, there was a love of pickle there, but –
I mean, you know, I think as we trace the history of Vlasic pickles, it wasn't like they were marketers who fell into a creamery. It was, but I do think it's funny that they said that they were coming from it from a marketing standpoint. Mm-hmm. That, and they're like, well, we're great at selling stuff. What are we going to sell? I know pickles.
Well, in order to sell the pickles, they came out with Bob Vlasic's 101 pickle jokes, and it sold 250,000 copies its first year.
Wow.
Yeah, I guess people really like a pickle pun.
I guess we've gone through quite a few, and I am resisting the urge to make more.
They prefer a pickle pun.
Yeah, that's definitely becoming a tongue twister. Listen, we gotta stop before we pickle again.
Perhaps.
But, okay. Well, all right. Enough alliteration. We're gonna say goodbye now. But if you guys have suggestions, like, this one was a suggestion from a listener. If you have suggestions, where can they send those to?
Well, they can send them to feedback@thebrinkpodcast.show.
Yep, and you can visit thebrinkpodcast.show. That's our website where you'll find an archive of all of our past episodes, a little bit more information about us. And until next time, I have been Jonathan Strickland.
And I've been Ariel Kasten. Business on the Brink is a production of iHeartRadio and How Stuff Works. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.